This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, September 22nd, the Norris Group proudly presents its 10th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Coach Fullerton, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club, Las Brisas Escrow, MVT Productions, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Realty 411, and White House Catering. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information and tickets.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is William E. Brown. Bill is a realtor from Alamo, California, and is the 2017 president of the National Association of Realtors. NAR is the voice of real estate, is America's largest trade organization, representing over 1 million realtors involved in all aspects of residential and commercial real estate industries. In 2013, Bill served as NAR's vice president, and prior to that has served in many other capacities and received many awards during the past 35 years. One thing I'll also mention is he's a second-generation realtor who's been active in organized real estate for the more than 35 years. He's the founder of Oakland-based Investment Properties, a division of family real estate business founded in 64 by his dad, William H. Brown, which focuses on the sale of existing apartment buildings to both institutional and private capital investors. So, Bill, we welcome you to our show.
Thanks, Bruce. It's good to be here.
You know, I think one of the things that kind of excites me about this interview is that you're not just a realtor, but you're also an investor, and that's not a normal combination.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You're absolutely correct. I started doing brokerage, apartment brokerage, and pretty much for the last 7 to 10 years, most of our efforts have been investing for my brother and I, our personal account, and also, I have a company that we started last year with a buddy of mine, Steve Wildback, and we do syndications. So, yeah, we do investments mainly all apartments.
Okay. Well, you got great timing. That's been a hot ticket for the last 7 or 8 years. Tell me a little bit about your dad and what he did in the business too.
Well, my dad started out. He started off as an insurance salesman, and then back in those days, they had what they called a debit. They would literally walk, maybe once or twice a week, from door to door in a designated area, and sell insurance. So he wound up being the number one guy in his company, and eventually, figured out that he wanted to work for himself, and real estate would be the best way. So he turned the debit that he had into what could really be called a farming area, and started there.
Okay.
I mean, started farming in his debit, and he opened his own company. He did pretty well.
So you kind of got the real estate bug from him, and you joined the industry somewhere in the early 80s?
No, actually 1975 or 76.
Okay. Well, I always like when people start, because so from 76 to, let's say, 80, if you're in California real estate, things are just cranking. And oddly enough, so were interest rates. So
yep.
By the time you get to the early 80s, you're dealing with an interest rate that's completely crazy. Now, at that time, was apartment building still a big piece of what you guys were doing?
Well, I actually started off doing homes, and it's interesting you measure. I did homes. So that was probably for a year or two, and then I got a listing on an apartment building, and I like that better because I'm more or less a numbers.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a numbers person.
Yeah, that'll work.
And, yeah. So I mean, it's I got involved with apartments and never turned back. But it's real interesting you talk about interest rates, Bruce, because it's a topic that comes up a lot now with our members and with clients. I can remember, just anecdotally, I can remember buying my house in 1979. And, initially I assumed a loan. It was at 9%. That was fine. I mean, what could possibly go wrong? I had refinanced it 2 years later, and my first refinance was at 19%.
Oh, my goodness.
and I can remember refinancing every time away. I can remember being happy to get an interest rate of 14%. So, I mean, what the long-winded message in this is, to our members and our members' clients is that, even if rates go up a little bit over the next couple of years, they're still at historically low levels.
Yeah, if I was a realtor dealing with clients, I'd have charts with me, and that would be one of the charts I'd point out. It really doesn't matter if it's 3.75 or 4.25; it's still on sale.
right, correct.
The interest rate portion is ridiculous. I kind of the same similar story. I wanted to be a full time investor. I had already paid off my home. I'm probably 28 years old. Refi it at 17.5. So, ouch.
Yeah.
Now, another thing, the reason why I was interested, you're in a product type in the early 80s that got a big boost because of some tax law changes in 1981. And then they took it back. And then they took it back.
They took it back in 86.
That's right.
Correct. I mean, that's 86. It actually, Tax Reform Act of 86 did a lot of things. One of the things it did do is lengthen depreciation. And, we have a lot of buyers. The wealthy of you buyers are buying apartments to take, advantage of accelerated depreciation that is available on the investment.
That's right.
And, the market, it actually started a year later when it really sunk in. It started in 87, and the market just went into the tank. And it's very good you bring that up, because that's what we're reminding Congress and the president right now, is that if they want to make drastic changes to mortgage interest deduction, they want to tinker with the tax deferred exchange, and we're telling them, don't you remember what happened to the real estate market back in '86 when you made drastic changes back then? Prices went down. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, and that is why I brought it up, because you were in the front row for that change. When you go from the attitude of 81 to 86, all of a sudden you end up with a crisis on your hand and enormous amount of losses. So now we're trying to figure out how. I understand we have a negative deficit. We're trying to figure it out. But one of the things that has always been near and dear to me is homeownership. I got married at 17, so it was like 3 years before I got a chance to own my home, saving like $20 once in a while in a can. But it was on my mind as a priority the whole time. And one of the things that plays out later in life is your stability, if you own a home or not. And that's one of the dangerous things right now, is that we're putting so, it doesn't seem like we have the emphasis we used to. Because that used to be a big deal. When I was in my mid-20s, man, that was the only goal financially I had, is I had to own a home. And then you look at statistics, the net worth of somebody 65 and older that doesn't own a home is something like $30,000. I mean, think about retiring.
I think it's less than that.
Yeah, it's...
And the net worth of someone who does own a home, it's over either $250,000 or $300,000.
Yeah, it's 10 times. It's a difference of multiple of 10.
Right.
And that's a big deal. And I know that that's what you've spent most of your life doing, is really getting involved in the decision process and helping other people see real estate as one of the key factors for the American household doing well and stability of not just financially, but just in general society. That's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, in terms of the stability also, I mean, you know, included in that stability, it really gives someone pride in a community. You know, they want to, make their cities, their neighborhoods and cities excel. And you find a lot of homeowners volunteering, you know, for stuff that's really good for their, for where they live. So, yeah, it extends past the financial benefits. So good for you, man. That's awfully forward thinking at 17. That's pretty good.
Well, trust me, I couldn't until I was about 20, but it was always on my mind. It's kind of funny because I've been a buyer and seller of many, many hundreds of homes since then, but I still literally remember on the Saturday after it closed on Friday that I was mowing my own grass for the first time, and it had a big impact on. I actually felt like a man for the first time. And we look into the future and write reports about what's likely to happen. So in 06, we write a 400-page report called The California Crash, and say in that document that chances are that houses could go down by 50%. So when you author a document like that and you live in a pretty expensive home, it might be a rational thought to sell it because you know you're going to save yourself $500,000. Well, I tried one day to be a renter. I really did. I called up and guy had a really cool house that was available for rent. I said, I'm not your typical renter. I'll pay a year in advance. And then the guy said, do you mind if I ask you a question? Do you have any pets? And it was at that moment I realized why I owned a house. And I didn't care if it went down by half, is that I didn't want anyone to ever get to ask me those questions again.
Yep. You as a homeowner, you're in control of your own destiny.
That's right. In that little space of the world, I get to paint my house whatever color and have a pet. And that's why I own. You know, I've had good financial success owning stuff, but it gets right down to I want control of being able to do what I want to do.
Yep. Very good. You're right.
Now, let's talk about the numbers, because since you've invested in apartment buildings, what would be, are you surprised, let's say, at the level of a cap rate that's still interesting buyers at this point? What would be a cap rate in Oakland, let's say?
So it depends where you are.
Okay.
And it's gotten to the point, Bruce, where we're return-based. I mean, I just turned 65 yesterday.
Okay.
My brother, who was my partner, I mean, we've been living off of our cash flow for the last, probably 7, 8, 10 years.
Yeah.
I don't really do brokerage anymore unless it's for a client. My clients or my friends, if they need something, I'll do it. But I'm not really seeking any brokerage business. So cash flow is the most important thing to us. So about probably 7 or 8 years ago, we sold the Bay Area.
Okay.
The last deal we did, we sold a building in Oakland for about 3.75% cap rate.
Wow.
And we have been investing in Portland, Oregon. And we converted that. So we sold a 3.75% cap, 3.75% cap, and bought it at Portland at 6%. I mean, when you combine that with the fact that rent control really constrained our ability to raise rent. And I mean, you know, you go through it, which is very frustrating, because rent control, it doesn't help the people it's intended to help. I mean, you could go through our buildings in Oakland, you know, when we own them, and see, you know, tenants driving their Lexuses, Mercedes, BMWs, and they're paying, you know, 50 or 60% of what the market would be. And, you know, we couldn't raise their rent.
Yes.
So it's very, rent control is very destructive, but, you know, we've been investing in the Portland area. We're about to get into Seattle because cap rates are just much better. The Bay Area.
Are you concerned about where they are? You were a seller, like I said, a number of years ago. I spoke in front of an apartment owners association probably 6 months ago, and the audience is usually 300 to 400 people. Today it was like 600 people, lined the wall, front side, every wall had standing people. And I was a little surprised. I said, okay. I said, you guys are either really excited or you're really concerned. And there was a little laughter. And then somebody stood up and he said, we want to know if there's a bubble in the apartment valuations, because that's what most of them owned. And I said, you know, and I'm really not an apartment guy, but I think I can get to the answer really quickly by asking one question. How many of you guys would buy your own apartment building out at its current cap rate? And then there was like a roar of laughter. And to me, that's the definition of a bubble. When you have no one willing to make the next decision, although that's the valuation. So I'm just curious, where do you think we're in bubble territory in some areas where you just go, okay, well, that just no longer makes sense?
Well, I think we're close to it. I mean, we're in Portland, we're seeing cap rates get down to, you know, at least stuff we're looking at, 5%. We're even seeing some of them, you know, slip into the high fours. And I think the real question, well, let me back up. The problem in the Bay Area is you find a lot of people buying on, you know, what I call the greater fool theory.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we'll pay 3.5 cap because, you know, hopefully we can raise the rent, and in 5 years someone will, you know, pay a 3.5 cap or better for the property. We'll make some money. That is eventually going to run out.
Right.
I think everyone, and in Portland, the real question is how long will rent keep on going up? You know, will there be a bubble in rent? Portland beat an initiative that would have allowed rent control this year? Are they going to come back next year? And if they do, will they be successful? I mean, you know, it's ability to raise rents and interest rates kind of go hand in hand.
You know, what's interesting about what you're saying is that, say in Riverside, Riverside's had a tremendous growth in rents, but the income hasn't matched that. And so at some point, what's been your experience where those two numbers no longer make sense for the majority of the people? Do they try now to become buyers, or do they say, I got to relocate to some place that's less?
Well, it, unfortunately, what's happening is those renters are having to move further away from their jobs in order to find affordable housing. And then, you know, that brings up another issue of production. I mean, a lot of the cities up, you know, in the Bay Area have put these, you know, fees on the builders to make it, I don't want to say impossible to build, but it makes it pretty tough. I mean, impact fees and all that stuff.
Yeah.
There's a scenario in Oakland where I think you can get up to $27,000 per unit on impact fees. The only thing, if a builder can make sense of those numbers, they're going to pass it on to renters, and the only people who are going to be able to buy those homes, I'm sorry, who are going to be able to rent those apartments are people on the upper end of the income spectrum. We have to find a way to build affordable housing. So, teachers, firemen, policemen can live in or close to the areas where they work. I mean, I know someone who works at Stanford, and she literally commutes 3.5 hours to work. It takes her 3.5 hours to get there and 3 hours to get back home.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness.
It's insane.
That is insane.
Absolutely insane. But it's a great job. But, I mean, what's her life like?
Yeah, she's spending 6 hours away from her family just to get to go to work. We've only got about 3.5 minutes left, so let's touch on the realtor world. How has it changed, let's say, in the last 5 years or so? You know, being a realtor, with access.
Only two realtor, not realtor. I hate to correct you, but
okay,
everybody does that. Only two syllables in realtor.
Okay.
Go on, I heard about that. I'm sorry.
How's the role changed in the last 5 years, and do you think it's going to change even more going forward?
Oh, absolutely, it's going to change going forward. I think technology is playing a big part, and if the agents that are really up on their markets do it through technology, and they're able to present to buyers and sellers, sell you information that is up to date and accurate. The challenge to the industry, one thing we're starting to see now, the growth of teams, inside of real estate brokerages. And, it's the high commission splits that brokers have to pay to retain successful teams are constraining their profits. So, I think, that's something that's very important to keep your eyes open on. Also, the government, local, state, national, with a swipe of a pen at any level, they have the ability to either help or disrupt the market. So I just encourage realtors who are involved there to get involved and really protect private property rights, the ability for us to do transactions, and also, as I mentioned earlier, enhance and protect the ability of builders to build affordable housing and also affordable rental.
I agree with what you just said. Last subject, probably. Do realtors view sites like Zillow as potential partners or competitors?
I know that a lot of our members get good leads from Zillow, but Zillow is a competitor from the standpoint of we promote Realtor.com,
right?
So it's up to us to make our members aware of the advantages of using Realtor.com, and but we also have to make sure Realtor.com is enhanced enough to make our members satisfied. It's the ability to give them what they want. Realtor.com CEO Ryan O'Hara, a really great guy, very sharp, who's molding a very good product, and I'd encourage our members to give us a chance.
Okay. Well, Bill, we've run out of time. We've been speaking with William E. Brown, and he is the president of the National Association of Realtors. Bill, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to be with us.
Bruce, that was fun. Thanks to you.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, First Lending Solutions, Guaranteed Rate, and Nathan Chiboya, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, LA South RIA, Michael Ryan, New Western, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, San Francisco Bay Real Estate Networking Summit, Sunoco Corporation, South Orange County Real Estate Club, Spinnaker Loans, Think Realty, You Direct IRA Services, West and South Coast Plaza, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event information.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.